Hi guys, I'm happy that you haven't left and didn't fall asleep. I know it's late in the day. We're gonna hit the bar soon. I'm happy to discuss everything you, any question you might have after the talk with you either here or at the bar. I scrapped all the demos because it took way too much time. So today we're gonna talk about manifest CypP, and we just talked about the node keyword and the lookup function. And we will talk about external node classifiers. That's all there is. No worries, this is no rocket science. There are many things we won't talk about. I will not give you an introduction to Hira. If you want an introduction to Hira, Martin will give you a presentation tomorrow at 2, which is called Why Does That Node Have That Config? And it's the best and shortest introduction to Hira you can possibly have. If there's some features you haven't seen, go to the presentation. I won't tell you how Puppet Code works. You have to give some clues. And we won't talk about YAML and team structure and efficiency and data privacy. Forget about it. I will show you a pattern of code, and you can think what you think about it, and then I will present my personal opinion. Your opinion may differ, and that's fine. If you have more customer stories to add, I'd like to hear them after the talk, for the recording, or the bar tonight. So, what about a very basic example? If you go to the Puppet documentation, you will see that in CypP, you should use the node keyword. And the documentation states you should use a cert name, which is the same as a fully qualified domain name. If it isn't, you are kind of screwed because it hurts. I've done it with customers. Cert name should be fully qualified domain name. Everything else will hurt. So, but there's a caveat. If your node is named foo.bus.example.com and foo.bus.example.com doesn't match, but looks like a valid FQDN, it gets shortened domain by domain until it matches. So foo.bus.example.com will match. Next thing, you can use regular expressions, kind of awesome, except that if you've got multiple expression matching the same cert name, like web server and match anything matches the same thing, you're not guaranteed what will happen. I didn't even know the rules before I looked it up for exactly this presentation, because I've never had a customer who deals with that seller. It looks promising because it's easy to audit, but my personal experience is complexities in grown companies are way higher and cannot be dealt with that. Let me give you a crash course about Hira and automatic data binding. I guess, Martin, you've given one previously. So, there's a Hira.yaml which describes a name of a list of file names or a list of file name patterns where to look data up. For example, this one refers to a file called comment.yaml, and in comment.yaml, you will find the name of a class, profile foo, the name of a parameter, var, and its value. And then in Puppet code, you will have a class foo, a parameter bar, and it gets automatically assigned. This is the way you should usually do it, because automatic lookup, automatic data binding is very fast. It's easy to debug and to reason about compared to all the other alternatives. And it provides you a bunch of opportunities. For instance, I decided to call it chain lookup. We have a Puppet class, which has a list of many other Puppet classes that we would like to include. For instance, the class chainloader has a variable called network class, and it has a string, what we call company standard network, profile network, whatever you would like to call it. And if this class is set to any value that is valid, it gets included. Of course, we have a list of classes. There are many patterns in here. First of all, if you have a reasonable default, like everybody should have the company standard network class, you should put it into the Puppet class header. Everything in Puppet is easier to reason about than in Hira. And anything in Hira is easier to reason about than any external node classifier or Hira magic. So, here's the story of Peter. Peter calls me, "I fucking hate Puppet. We've just been tuning our content delivery network. We've been setting kernel parameters for maximum TCP throughput, and the next Puppet agent happens and it's all gone. Screw you." And I was like, "Hey Peter, why don't you just put your values into Hira? I fucking hate Puppet, I don't want to reason about it. Well, what about Puppet agent -disable? Well, you see, compliance screws me. Nah, not the first. Okay, Peter, so here's the thing. We've got a class which is called Company Standard Linux Kernel Settings. Just disabled. You will have the company standard except for this very little piece that you can exclude. And it's fine. I found this pattern easy to reason about in big corporations where there are special snowflakes which deal with some company default and some less company default. It's fine. Side with you. We've talked about it, but not keyword. Every Puppet agent starts its Puppet run in sidepp. This is where the magic begins, and sidepp can have any piece of Puppet code. It's not just a node keyword. Anything that's available Puppet can go into sidepp. Each one will go through it at the beginning of each Puppet run. So it's the perfect spot to include more classes. Here's one of those patterns. You can have certificate signing request extensions. Those become trusted facts of your node. The important thing about trusted facts is they don't need to be collected by factor, so they are available before your first Puppet run. If you instead use facts, that might also be fine. Keep in mind, a client can fake its facts, and on your first Puppet run, there are no facts there yet. So you would prefer trusted wherever you can. And then inside PP, you would do something like contain role and then refer to the trusted facts, and that will extend to role web server, and the class gets included. That's fine. I've got one customer who does it that way. They've got many teams. Each of them fork their control repository, which is also kind of the standard lib. And then each team puts their 2 to 5 roles in there. If you've got a limited set of roles, that's fine. There are two things you need to know to understand this. There's an object identification mapping, which gives you a list of valid keywords. And the roles and profiles pattern, which basically is a profile is a small building block, like a firewall rule, and a role is a more complex use case that assembles many profiles into one use case. For example, my company web server for customer A. Let's talk about lookup once more. We've talked about automatic data binding. You can cheat automatic data binding by using explicit Hira lookup. And usually, you shouldn't do that, except for this one case. In your sidepp, you can put any piece of Puppet code, for instance, the lookup function. And we could get a list of a keyword that we set by ourselves, I decided for classes, and use data binding of Hira to get a list of classes, which then get included one by one. For example, but the hierarchy might be complex, might be easier, and we will collect the keyword classes in each of those files. We will go through foo.domain.yaml and collect classes, and we'll collect the DNS profile, the NTP profile. We will also go through the data center configuration for Munich and set parameters for the NTP class. We collect more classes, the backup one. And in common, we'll collect company standard. So this node will have a collection of 1, 2, 3, 4 classes assigned to it. This is a pretty neat approach for a huge company that's been growing for years and decided later to introduce automation into their system. You can assemble components by host, by data center, and it makes it easy to assemble and to reason about it. This is a pattern I was very happy with at large corporations. Let's recap what we've seen so far. We've talked about site PP, which contains the load keyword. I've never used this one. We've talked about the chain loader and the roles and profiles pattern, which can be fine if you've got a limited set of roles. We've talked about the trusted facts, why you should use them, and about the lookup, which I prefer for large grown companies. Okay, now let's switch to turbo mode. Here's one for you. It's an idea that Martin from BetaDots came up with. What if instead of just including classes, we would also do class ordering? So in your YAML files, you have a priority in which order they should get loaded. They get split up by priority and class name, get sorted and get loaded. That is left as an exercise to the reader how to do that. I've seen it in our training sessions, and while I think it's tempting, for me personally, it mentally hurts. It raises the barrier of what you need to understand if you do class ordering in Haira. It can work, but my personal opinion about class ordering is do only as much as you need. Okay, that's all about SubPP. We're done. Let's switch to external node classifiers. External node classifiers are a piece of magic that injects into your SubPP either top scope variables or classes or class parameters, and it can do even more magic and assign environments to nodes. I want to talk to you today about two classifiers, which is the public enterprise classifier. I've used it extensively in about 4 minutes. You could easily write your own, you will see at the end. So this is what a public enterprise classification looks like. You have a class which is called all nodes, and pardon, it's called a host group. And within this host group, you have a set of matches. For example, you could match by host name, or you could match by trusted facts. And then you can have subgroups like all environments and application config. Application config can have subgroups such as compliance. We talked about grown-up companies where some machines adhere to the company standard and some don't. So if you want to have a compliance class, which most of your nodes get and some don't, make sure all of those nodes end up in the compliance host group. This is how the matching looks like. I have a group which is what's called Data Center Munich, and I match by trusted extension PP Data Center equals Munich, and all hosts get assigned into the host group. This is how you put class parameters into host groups. The same we did with higher automatic data binding. Those are top scope variables. Don't use them, they get confusing very soon. Those are classes you can assign to host groups. Totally fine. Except that I've overdone it. I came up with the ingenious idea. I've studied computer science. I knew what a Boolean expression looks like. If a host in that group needs also to be a member of that group, that's a logical AND. And if I can match by any node, I can have a logical OR, so I can have now completely undebuggable expressions. So here's the story. Alex calls me. You know, I run the monitoring system and we really need to update our monitoring configuration. Can you help me? Well, sure, do you have a config? Well, of course I have. Well, that's about. How do I find your nodes? Well, that's quite easy. You find them by data center there, Munich, Berlin, and Frankfurt. Totally awesome. You run a Puppet query, PQL, and figure out you have 4,000 nodes. Alex, are you sure that those are yours? Oh no, please stop the deployment. That's a bad idea. Well, how can we identify those nodes that we would like to run your configuration on? Alex, let's turn it in. You give me a list of fully qualified domain names. Your monitoring system knows them. So Alex returns a list of 2,000 FQDNs. Totally awesome. What to do next? Well, all of them need to have the new monitoring class assigned. How are you going to do that? I'm an engineer. If a problem can be solved by the regex, I will find the regex. Just put it with one regex. And then you put the regex into the classical graphic classification. Totally awesome. Problem is solved. By the way, it's called certificate pinning. If you use the Puppet Enterprise console to pin, it translates into a Postgres expression equals hostname I, one, or equals hostname two, or equals. The idea is not that stupid. Puppet came up with it by itself. So, problem solved. Well, kind of. Our database was down. The issue is our database hasn't been performed before. We had snapshot stapling enabled, so each read had to go through multiple snapshots before finally timing out. We had too few CPUs and lots of reg access on the database. We use Postgres. We transform PQL to SQL. We do not optimize our statements. You should expect a spinner. By the way, standard timeout for Postgres is 60 seconds. You can extend it. We extend it to 3 minutes. It's still timed out. But for some magical reason, the classification worked. And just decided, I'm not going to know what are the matching nodes of the source code anymore. At some point, we just lost our control. Here's another story for you. Story of burned. How not to classify your nodes. So I get a call Monday evening at 20. Our production system is down. Would you mind to assist us? And you need to know, these systems are very special snowflakes. I got promised that once we introduce the automation system, no special snowflakes will get set up ever anymore. Well, except for that project, which was kind of important, and management pressed on it, and it didn't follow any company standard. So we need to find a classification room. And I go into the call, and I immediately get yelled at, it's your automation system that rolled out SSH keys onto my machines, and now the machine-to-machine communication is broken. Now you tell me why. Well, took me half an hour to come up with an idea. So basically, you know my regex expressions and my favor for nested data structures. They shouldn't have had the SSH keys class. How did they get it? Well, they are classified mostly by the name, domain name, and by host name. What if somebody had renamed this host? We've been looking at the reports, and since the Puppet agent was disabled, the most recent report was the one that had the most recent facts. We have a look at the facts and figured out all of those were named IP. Who the hell had renamed this host? Well, it turns out a colleague of mine wanted to run a little shell script to get the host name of each of those and an IP address and some more data about the application. Important thing is, if you do not put in a semicolon here, your host name will get set. So we set 40 host names to the host name IP, classification kicked in, and rolled out company standard. My personal opinion is, the Puppet Enterprise classification gets confusing quite easily. Do not try to use it. Do everything you can inside PP. Use the hierarchical data binding. It's fine. Everything else is a mental burden. Of course, you can have the same thing in open source. It's called Foreman, and it's one of the external classifiers. You can have top two variables. Don't use it. It's confusing. It's hard to compile your catalogs and hard to debug. Martin just talked about it. And it's like class parameters. Can have a list of classes, bit about it. And you can have debug output. This is the YAML the external node classifier will provide to Puppet server to inject all these variables into CypherP. And now you get an impression on how you could write your own external node classifier. you know, classify my shell script binary or whatever, and just gets run by Puppet server and generates a bit of data. Not even Puppet run. If you want to follow up, we've got a training for that, and you can look it up by yourself on GitHub. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
You mentioned a couple of times not to use the top scope variables from the ENC. Can you elaborate on that? Well, but why not to do it, I mean?
At some point, we want an example of the top scope.
Well, you had it in format as well, so
I didn't.
It doesn't matter where.
You can only debug your catalogs if they get compiled.
Yeah, no.
So if, for instance, if you want to introduce a new fact and see how it performs on your fleet of a few thousand machines, you will need to compile their catalogs to see your top scope variable in action. It's harder to debug in various ways. If your catalog does not compile, it's harder to debug. Is it your top scope? Is it something else?
But how, and we said like you need to have the variable set to compile, but that also applies to anything that you is that they set as like profile parameters. Or do you mean that because they have defaults, it's not a sort of problem?
Automatic data binding is very easy to debug, especially if you don't have top scope variables. You can just use the Puppet lookup command. The Puppet lookup command by itself doesn't honor top scope variables until run with --- compile.
I see what you mean. But the point is, like, if you do it like in the Puppet Enterprise console, for example, do you just like inject the classes that you want to load? Or like, for what we do is we inject all the, like a few top scope variables, basically that group the system, so we would know like what cluster or project it's in, and then use that in Hira. And I'm not sure how to replicate that without top scope variables.
Okay. So in the past, I've run a mixture of automatic data binding in Hira and Puppet Enterprise classification, and all of them assign classes onto one node, and it was really confusing to debug that. If I were to do it all over again, which you never get a chance to, I would do it all in Hira. It's easier to reason about. And
no, what I'm saying is, how does Hira know like which project or which role this machine has? Unless
my
you are saying
personal
like,
favor is the trusted fact.
Okay, but I understand that, but that means it has to be integrated more into the signing process, and also it's harder to like change it or whatever.
I mean, the short term, if you can't get it into trusted facts, is just to write a Ruby fact that drops, that returns what data center it's in, or
okay,
whatever.
But how does the Ruby fact has to read a file on the agent machine, and how does that get filled?
It gets synchronized upon the agent run. You just put it in the module in the lib factor directory, and everything what is in the lib directory of all modules gets synchronized.
No, I don't mean the fact implementation, I mean the fact's value.
The fact, okay, this is then the Ruby code, you must know it. If you don't know it because you have no relation from the FQDN, for example, to what the system should do, then we did it at another customer, is that the provisioning system created an external fact on that system. Okay. So because it's easier to change compared to a trusted fact.
Okay. But this just seems like external classifier with extra steps. If I have a provisioning system, which would be format for me, which can be an ENC, or I can write files during installation, it seems a lot easier like to use ENC. I get the point with the compilation, but everything else is a lot more direct if you use ENC. And you use Foreman ENC anyway because you want to set the environment.
And if you're using Foreman ENC at that point, you should know that data, and you can just tell it what classes to use instead of setting top scope variables.
I think it's a lot easier if the classes are included in the Puppet code. And also there are some variables that affect like Hira settings, not just which classes are loaded. I think it's clearer to not load classes from the ENC and just have all the classes in Puppet and just inject some metadata from the ENC.
And this is the same argument, and it's easier to have all the variables in the Puppet code so that you know where they come from.
Well, I know where they come from. They come from the ENC. What I would like
then
is
you
for
know
the
where the classes come from.
What I would like is for the ENC variables to have their own top scope name. So it's like facts have been moved to $facts, right? And I think ENC should be treated the same, which unfortunately it's not, but that's the only thing that we balance with.
it's a design thing. When you can live with it, do it. But I see this top scope as global variables, and every programmer dislikes global variables.
Can I suggest really quick that we take this?
I don't want to like. Here?